This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run on BFM 89.9, B Business Station. I'm Lisa Idris with Tanjung Han and Joyce Goh this morning as we take a look at the local business scene. Now, there's been a dramatic change in the leadership team at Bank Negara. Deputy Governor of Bank Negara, Dr. Sukhdev Singh, yesterday announced his resignation as Deputy Governor, effective 31st December.
Yeah, so this resignation came as quite the surprise, at least for those of us outside of the central bank, because his term is only set to end in April 2019, so well ahead of when his term is supposed to end. I mean, well, he reportedly decided to step down to take the, quote, early retirement option, which brings the curtains down on his tenure at the central bank that has spanned over three decades, essentially, you know, how old we are. Yeah. I mean, not combined, but yeah. You know, and then what has really gone viral was this, you know, his goodbye letter to friends and colleagues there. And it's been carried by some media outlets and certainly on social media. And the first paragraph was quite telling. And let me just read this to you, okay? Quote, "All I can say is that my life in the bank has been based on certain professional expectations. And when I find myself put in circumstances where those expectations can no longer be met, there could have been no other decision for me." So leaves plenty of room for speculation. What on earth were those so-called professional expectations that could not be met?
Yeah, and what are the circumstances that he's talking about? But, you know, just to come back on how this was being reported, Han, the letter, this resignation letter, was initially, I think, first picked up on NSD Online last night. And that's when it was then picked up by other news media outlets. Online portals picked it up first. But if you look at today's print copy, Business Times in NSC didn't include any excerpts of that letter, anything that you read just now. Yeah, All they have is just a column of the new deputy governor. And if you look at the original page of the NSC online, it's been removed. So you can find the 404 page not found.
Hey, yeah. So Melissa, talking about the story being removed, Malay Mail Online had the story as well on this letter, this resignation letter or parting letter that Sukhdev Singh had given out, but it's been taken down as well. We just checked it before we came on air, and it's been you can't find it as well. But if you go to their Facebook page, Malay Mail Online's Facebook page, the story is there, but when you click on the link, it doesn't take you to the story.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, plenty of conspiracy theories going on this morning. I mean, but to be fair, well, The Edge, you know, has got it in their print edition. So that paragraph that I read out just now. Yeah.
The Starbiz has this, it's printed as well. It says that in the parting shot, it says that leadership is a responsibility and not a privilege. And it is understood that the outgoing deputy governor has reminded his colleagues that nothing shines a brighter light into the depths of your character than your behavior when you believe that you have powers over others.
And apparently there's a line about bullying as well. So, quote, "It is also never acceptable to use bullying as a means to exert your leadership."
That was on online, though. Online.
That was said to be part of the resignation letter.
And I saw the screenshot of that letter as well, and it was there as well. So again, what were the circumstances that surrounded or compelled him to write this letter, right?
Well, okay, so let's talk about Dr. Sukhdev's replacement. Jessica Chu Cheng Lien has been appointed deputy governor for a three-year term now, effective 1st Jan.
Yeah, so her appointment was approved by the Ministry of Finance, and she's currently the assistant governor. And she's responsible for the development of regulations and policies in the banking and insurance sectors, and while focusing on development, finance, and talent development. And she's also responsible for payment systems development and regulation and oversight of the money services business.
Yeah, you know, but real quick, we did some channel checks, right, over yesterday, because like the Star broke this story early yesterday morning. So throughout the course of the day, you know, we spoke to some people. So on one hand, you got people, you know, from the central bank who say that, you know, they vouch for her competence, you know, she's legit, you know, she's great for the role. On the other hand, we also got comments from someone whereby apparently Jessica was hesitant to take this role to begin with, right? So, again, those kind of information just really fuels the rumor mill here, right? What really is going on at the deputy governor level at the central bank?
Well, at that level, Han, there's been quite a shuffle already among deputy governors at Bank Negara. If you look at Dr. Sukhdev's resignation, he is now, in a space of a year, he's the second Bank Negara deputy governor to have resigned.
Yeah, that's right. So a year ago, November 2016, Dato' Noor Samsiah Mohamed Yunus was not reappointed to the role when her tenure ended, right?
Yeah, so according to sources quoted by the Star, she's now with the International Monetary Fund. And we've also got Syed Abdul Rashid bin Abdul Ghaffar, who was made deputy governor to replace Tan Sri Mohamed Ibrahim after he was promoted to become governor.
Yeah, I think that was July 2016. Mm. Yeah.
All right, so if I could just clarify what I said, not the second deputy bank governor to resign, but to step down. Mm. So Dr. Sukhdev had decided to take early retirement, and we've got Dato' Noor Samsiah not renewing her tenure, right? Mm.
Yeah, so right now we have Abdul Rashid and Jessica, that makes two deputy governors. And by law, Bank Negara is allowed to appoint up to three deputy governors. So right now there's one vacant spot.
Jing. I wonder whether they're going to fill up that spot. But let's move away from the finance sector to the infrastructure sector. Gamuda and MRCB have joined forces to bid for the KL Singapore High Speed Rail project. So this is the HSR project.
Mm. Yeah, so Gamuda and MRCB will split this 50-50, and this bid is for the role as project delivery partner for the HSR project. Only if they get the job, then they will enter a definite agreement to thrash out their rights and obligations to each other. And recall that the PDP, this is a project delivery partner tender, was called last Wednesday. This was November 22nd,
yeah,
right?
Exactly, a week ago.
Yeah, and this was for the civil infrastructure portion of the Malaysian side of the high-speed rail, which is most of the project.
Yeah, so 96% of the 350-kilometer tract will be here in Malaysia. The rest, that 15 km, that's
the
in Singapore.
Last stretch.
Yeah, you know, we'll let them worry about that part. Okay. So according to CIMB research, the fact that this job is based on a PDP model, right, project delivery partner, that comes as a positive surprise. Why? Because this means that there could be more Malaysian involvement in this job. Now, this is in contrast to what we saw with MRT3. We spoke about that a lot here on this show, right? That project was awarded on a turnkey contract basis, okay? And that turnkey contract would then place the financing risk on the lead contractor. So all that noise about how, you know, with the MRT3 being a turnkey project, you know, that kind of prices out all the local guys.
Yeah, it's just the foreign players right, could, you know, be involved. Yeah.
Right, because they're the only ones who can take on that 90% financing risk. Well, in this case, though, well, that noise from MRT3 doesn't necessarily feed into this high-speed rail project.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, both Gamuda and MRCB appear to have the required expertise. Gamuda was the PDP for the Mass Rapid Transit MRT projects, and MRCB was appointed PDP for the LRT3 with Josh Kent a couple of years ago. So this fits in with the MyHSR says are the prerequisites of this job, right? And companies must have undertaken railway projects in Malaysia before and must show comprehension knowledge of best practices in Malaysian railway construction, regulatory requirements and market conditions.
Yeah, so I mean, if I could just go back to what you said, Han, about, you know, this being on a PDP basis, right? That means the government will have to take on the financial risk.
Mm.
So the financing risk, right? So that's, I mean, what does that mean? Because it's going to be Dana Infra that will have to deal with this.
Yeah, so Dana Infra is the entity that is tasked with raising the capital, you know, to fund all these infrastructure projects, right? Usually from the debt market. But the question here is, you know, can Putrajaya take on that much more debt? Because according to the Prime Minister, and this was carried in the Malaysian Reserve, you know, the government has guaranteed loans of over 217 billion ringgit. That 217 is part of a broader federal government's total debt of over 685 billion ringgit.
Yeah, so Han, that 685 billion ringgit, that's just under 51% of total GDP, right? At 50.9%, and which, to be fair, is below the self-imposed ceiling of 55% of GDP.
Sure, yeah. But the criticism here, you know, just to give, you know, multiple angles to this story, the criticism here is, you know, whether or not Putrajaya may have adopted some creative accounting, shall we call it that, to keep debt levels low. Very often they point to what happened last year with the Public Sector Home Financing Board. So with that move, they took took 22 billion ringgit worth of government debt into this agency, the Public Sector Home Financing Board, and that one is to finance civil servants' mortgages. When you make that move, you automatically wiped off 2 percentage points of the total debt to GDP that the federal government has. And so whether or not this is just some creative counting, whether or not the federal government is shouldering more debt than that number below 51% of GDP, whether that really lets on.
Well, 2% is still quite significant if you're looking at almost reaching that self-imposed ceiling of 55%.
Just going back to the prospects for Gamuda.
2 percentage points.
Now going back to the prospects for Gamuda and MRCB though, they've got cash registers perhaps ringing in their ears, because I mean at the same time that also warrants the tremendous competition, right? Because back in July, they had a briefing in Singapore. That briefing attracted reps from 165 companies, both local and foreign.
Yeah, so companies from China, Japan, France, they're all wanting to get into this project because it's worth about 50 to 60 billion ringgit. Who wouldn't want it, right?
Yeah, of course. It's going to be huge for an order book.
Yeah, how that does that filter down to the company, right? So, let's do some math here. And this is using CIMB research calculations. So the PDP portion could be up to 60% of the total project. So 60% of that 50 to 60 bill that Joyce just mentioned, okay? Mm-hmm. Because you've got the PDP part and also the asset company part. That's slated for later this year. Asset company, they focus on systems and trains, okay? So the estimated fee for the PDP will be at 6%. So you do the back of envelope calculations, 6% of, up to 40 billion ringgit or so, that translates to fees of over 2 billion ringgit for the PDP, 2.4-ish, right? So, money.
Ish.
Well, for China, Japan, and France, they all have the expertise as well. So obviously, they want to look into the project and they have the expertise to back them up as well.
And they could be stiff competition. So we'll have to see whether or not this could be in favor of Gamuda and MRCB. All right, well, let's take a look at the opening numbers from Bursa Malaysia that is coming up just after this on the 9 o'clock news bulletin, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.